So I have no relationships to disclose. Maybe some ex-boyfriend. No, I'm just kidding. thanks for laughing in the back. Oh, boy. All right, so I'm going to start off a little bit odd. I wanted to ask sort of a rhetorical question, and I'll come back to this at the end. Maybe you'll want to answer it then, but the question is, why are you here? So not why are you here at APHA physically, but why are you here in public health, whatever field you work in? Because sometimes I think we forget. I think we get caught up in, you know, what we're doing every day and the hustle and bustle. And I wanted to take a step back and just think about that for a minute. So I'll tell you a story, actually, about my first date with my husband. We had met St. Patrick's Day at a bar. Didn't know too much about each other other than we liked the two-for-one drink special. And here we were on a date. I think I knew at that point that he was a stockbroker, and he knew I was thinking about applying to public health school. And I'm sitting there with this handsome older man looking for, you know, something I could connect with him on, and there's this awkward lull in the conversation, and it's just we're sitting there. And he says, "So, what do you want to do with your life?" And immediately I said, "I want to make the world a better place." And immediately the water came out of his mouth, sprayed across the table, and landed on my face. And he was laughing. And I was just sitting there, shocked. I didn't know what was so funny. And he looked at me and he said, "Wait, you're serious?" And I was. That's why I'm here. I really do want to make the world a better place. And so I do also want to make this interactive, so some of my questions won't be so rhetorical, and maybe at the end we can talk about why you're here. But we are here for public health. We are here to make communities and the public healthier. And hopefully you've all seen this wheel of public health. In particular, I want to focus today on the assessment part. Surveillance and monitoring and investigation, they're big pieces of public health. But I think there's a big gap when it comes to assessment and monitoring. When you guys think of surveillance, what do you guys think of? CDC? Yep. What kind of things that CDC is looking at come to mind immediately? Ebola, exactly. That's a good one. Other people? Technology needs and gaps for surveillance. Leave it to you, Todd. other folks?
I think of the 100-page reports that my state health department puts out about asthma or oral health. Mm-hmm. All the things, all the burden assessment documents.
Absolutely. So you're absolutely right. So all of you are right. And what I think of when I think of surveillance is things like flu, STDs, maybe VRFS, which Lena used to work on. I don't think of environmental health, really. I don't think we're doing that good of a job in environmental health surveillance. And that's what today is about. Now, I think everybody hopefully knows what the tracking network is. The tracking network is our national surveillance mechanism for environmental health. And I think it's doing a great job, but I think that there is a big gap. So here's another question for you guys. How about monitoring? When you think about monitoring, what do you guys think of? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Great. So technology. So monitoring technology, basically. I know Todd is right there with you. I tend to think of monitoring air, monitoring water, monitoring soil. So if you put those two together, looking for sort of diseases and looking at sort of environmental hazards, I think you get a broken stool. So does anybody remember, or does anybody know, I know Mary does, back when tracking first was proposed by the Pew Environmental Commission, they proposed three legs to the tracking network. Should I put you on the spot, Mary, or should I ask the group? She's saying no. Anybody anybody know what these three legs were intended to be? I know Lena does. You can't answer. Mark. You got it. But it was last, and you had to think a little bit. So I'm not implying that the tracking network is broken. I am amazed at what the tracking network has done. And, you know, in the past couple of years, the tracking network has added exposure data, but it's exposure data at the national level. And when it comes to why I got into public health, I got into it not only to help the nation, but to help communities who had questions about environmental health issues. I wanted to be able to help one person breathe easier or have a better life. You about to say something? No, okay. Just deep in thought. So where I think the gap is state-based exposure data is not part of public health surveillance in an integral way. There are states that are doing it, and the tracking network is trying, and we've been trying to help, but it's not where it needs to be. So APHL has as one of our goals to get, well, let me take a step back, actually. This is the first time I've used this word, biomonitoring. Anybody, I have a definition that we were at APHL use. Does anybody else want to try to say what they think this word means? Not Mark. Yeah. Perfect. Basically, measuring, our definition is measuring chemicals in people or their metabolites. You can get into all sorts of nuances and accumulation and things. So we believe at APHL that biomonitoring should be an integral part of public health practice, public health surveillance, public health systems, and we're working to try to get there. And it's not just laboratories. Biomonitoring needs epidemiologists, and it needs toxicologists, and it needs communities, and it needs policymakers. And so we're really trying to pull together the whole system so that we can better answer community questions about their exposures. You know, I'm going to get into some stories, but just because there's arsenic in our water doesn't necessarily mean we're absorbing it into our bodies. We probably are if we're drinking it, but just because there's something that's in our environment doesn't necessarily mean that it's getting into us, and biomonitoring can provide that answer. So we can do it. It's already being done. This is not an unreasonable goal. And the great state of Washington is an example. Due to volcanic activity, they have a volcano up here somewhere. There it is, Mount St. Helens, sort of down near the wind surfer. Due to volcanic activity, a lot of shellfish, they love their shellfish in Washington consumption, and also a history of smelting. There's quite a bit of potential in Washington state for arsenic exposure. And so the public health laboratory in Washington decided to do a surveillance study of people who live in Washington to find out what levels of arsenic they're being exposed to. And from 2009, working with CDC, from 2009 to 2011, they collected over 1,400 urine samples from people all across the state, age 6 and over. And they analyzed the samples, not just for arsenic, but actually for 12 metals and for some pesticides as well. They simultaneously worked with the tracking folks at the state to collect some drinking water samples to see if there was a correlation between drinking water and what they found in people's urine of arsenic. So the results are in, and in Washington state, there are higher levels of arsenic in people than in the national level. So they use CDC's data as a comparison population. And so what they ended up doing is they were able to communicate back to the residents of Washington, here's how to avoid arsenic in your daily life. I think they hope to do a follow-up study to see, you know, over time if these levels go down. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's pretty much the story for Washington. I think it's an example of setting a baseline surveillance level so that you can, if you do have a community that's concerned about a particular exposure, you can look back to what is the rest of the state exposed to. You can also compare it to what the rest of the country is exposed to. And a lot of times, hopefully, you'll be able to calm fears and say, look, you're not exposed to, you know, you're at the same level as most everybody else in the United States. There's, you know, you don't have to worry so much. So, moving on to Minnesota. So in the 60s and 70s, there was a perfluorochemical manufacturer, or PFC, that dumped a lot of waste in Washington County, Minnesota. Here's some pictures of what Washington County looks like. It seems like a very pretty town. And PFCs represent a family of man-made chemicals that are added to products to make them resistant to grease, water, stains. And they've been shown, there have been some studies that have shown prenatal exposure to PFOA and PFOS can lead to adverse birth outcomes. So when PFCs were discovered in the drinking water wells of people who lived in Washington County, they started to get a little nervous. And the Minnesota Department of Health and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency did an investigation and a remediation, and the legislature, the communities actually were able to get together and talk to the legislature and get some money to do a biomonitoring study. So in 2007, the legislature mandated this biomonitoring study. And in Minnesota, the biomonitoring staff are the tracking staff. They're the same people. So talk about working together. They got almost 200 samples from participants across these two counties, and they found that the geometric mean in both communities was slightly higher than the national average. And so over the summer of 2009, they had community meetings, and they talked to the communities about what the results meant, about what they weren't sure about, because there's always a lot of questions when it comes to biomonitoring, and, you know, what answers they had and which ones they didn't. And attendees basically walked away knowing that the PFCs were in their drinking water, they were getting into their bodies, and ways that they could reduce their exposure. Now, the neat part of this study is they did do a follow-up study. So the legislature mandated another study to look to see if these actions being taken were reducing the levels. And so they did another study with a longer questionnaire and gathered more information and looked at the two-year change, and the levels were lower. So that's another great use of biomonitoring, is to show that when there's policies put in place or there's public health interventions, they're working. We can actually document that over time, and they're actually going to do a third study. So they are really looking hard at this issue. So what does all this mean? I don't expect you to read this. It's basically from a document that Cirilli Patel in the back of the room, back when she was working at APHL, actually most of this work that I'm presenting is Cirilli's. I have to give her all the credit. She's now at APHA, so she can't present on our behalf anymore. This is a document that shows why and how laboratorians can work better with epidemiologists, whether it's on environmental health tracking and biomonitoring or whatever it is. So if anybody wants a copy of this document, the bottom line is that the better integrated the fields are, the better impact we have on public health. And the more communication and the more connections, the better we're going to work together. It's common sense, but it doesn't always happen. So this document sort of tries to outline ways that it can happen and highlight places where it is happening. But, all right, so I want to get back to my big question that I started off with. Why are we all here? APHL also has a program to better connect communities with laboratories. There's a lot of communities out there with environmental health concerns, and they're not getting the answers that they deserve. And APHL decided that we were going to try to do our best to help meet their needs and answer their questions within the system within which our laboratories work. And so we created this project, Meeting Community Health Needs to Environmental Laboratories. This website is geared toward the public, and it's an opportunity for the public to ask laboratorians questions about lab results, about testing, to see if there's a laboratory that might be willing to work with them to analyze samples, whether they're human samples or, you know, to do biomonitoring, or whether they're air, water, or soil samples. And so that's sort of my passion and why I'm here. And so I wanted you all to see how the biomonitoring and the tracking and the surveillance and all this work connected. I think at the end of the day, we want to better meet community needs. And if I can't convince you that we need to do that because you want to make the world a better place, my husband is a stockbroker, and he says the answer to 99 out of 100 questions is money. Think about it this way. As a field, public health and environmental health, our funding is going down. And how can we expect our funding to do anything but that if the very communities, the taxpayers who fund our work, who use our work, don't even appreciate us or don't even trust us or don't even know that we exist? And so I think that if we want our programs to continue and we want them to grow, we need to meet the communities where they are, and we need to understand what their needs are, and we need to become relevant to them in their daily lives. So next year I'm going to take over as chair of the environment section here at APHA, and I think I'm going to make this my platform or my issue, and I'm looking for help. It's a big project. You know, the laboratory piece is a small part of it, as I alluded to. So if anybody has ideas, questions, concerns, even if you want to tell me I'm on the wrong track, I'm looking for feedback and help. So that's it. Questions, concerns? Am I over time? Do you want me to wait till the end? Okay. Thoughts? I think the answer is yes and no. I think lead is one of our best success stories when it comes to biomonitoring. Hopefully you've all seen those graphs of, you know, once we pulled the lead out of the gasoline, you know, the blood lead levels just shot down. I think there's a couple problems with it. I think, A, people are tired of hearing about lead because we talk about it so much. And, B, I think the second problem is lead is one of the few environmental exposures that we really have a sense of, you know, dose response from epi studies. And, you know, there's so many chemicals that we're actually looking at, hundreds of them, and we don't really have a good sense of what the health effects are. And so I think lead is definitely a great success story that we need to come back to, but I think we can't let lead hold us back from biomonitoring for all the other chemicals out there, because I think from a public health perspective, whether we know what the chemical does to our health or not, we need to know what levels it's at, because if it's going to go up, we might want to be concerned and we might want to prioritize that for health effects studies. So is that, what do you think? What do you think? You agree? Kind of, not really.
Yeah, I think that's
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Thank you all for your time and attention. Contact me if you have any thoughts or suggestions.